shit show. It's a fucking shit show.
Well, welcome back to Shit Show Saturday. We have Shit Show Joe in the house. Welcome.
Thank you. Good to see you.
How do you feel about this?
Good. I'm a little nervous, but I'm good. Yeah.
Exactly. When did you join the community?
Well,
I feel like you joined early on and then you peaced out and then you came back.
Yeah, exactly. So I was on Patreon and I just wasn't ready.
There.
Yeah. And I made up stories that I didn't fit in and nobody liked me. And so I, you know, kind of took my ball and went home. And then I think about a year later, I was like, okay, yeah, I get where this is going.
Well, I'm curious because this actually might be an interesting thing to bring up, because there might be some other people who were in the same position and might feel like scared or embarrassed to come back. Was there something that you realized where like you felt comfortable like coming back and like knew that it would be okay?
Yeah, I think I realized that, you know, kind of why I left the community before was just me projecting all my bullshit around not fitting in or feeling like an outsider and all that kind of stuff. And so I just sort of rationalized, you know, continuing to isolate. And then I think what made me come back was like, okay, I really, really get it now that I've taken healing as far as I possibly could on my own. And it is a community act now. And that I don't know how to create authentic connection. And so where can I find places to build that skill? And so, you know, you instantly came to mind, because I've been a longtime listener and, you know, pretty religiously listened every single week. So I was like, all right, that's it. I got it.
Have you noticed that it's been easier for you to like open up the longer that you are participating? Like, does it feel less scary to share?
Feels less scary to share. I also felt really safe not to share for a long time. So I came to different groups and to the chat and all that and lurked for a long time. And it was really nice not to feel that pressure. You know, I could just show up and share as much or as little as I wanted. And so slowly I've been, you know, kind of opening up a little bit more, and it feels really good. You know, it's like, I can do it at my own pace. I have a tendency to push myself beyond my too much, you know, and then have to retract. And so I've just been like allowing it to unfold more organically.
You know, what's interesting, like from the perspective of like me allowing crosstalk, like,
yes.
I feel like when we do crosstalk, it's not necessarily like directly telling somebody what to do, but it's more just specifically relating it to our own experience. And so I'm curious, and you could obviously tell me, like, has there ever been a time where you felt like somebody has like been overbearing or pissed you off?
No, absolutely not. No, you know, and the crosstalk, like you said, it's not advice, it's support and it's sharing. And it's something that's really attractive about the Shit Show is, you know, I've always known like ACA and I should go and all that kind of stuff, but I've been sort of put off by 12 step. And so I love that this is like the right, for me, the right way to do 12 step.
Yeah. Some people are in 12 step communities. Other people aren't. I mean,
yeah,
I think
exactly.
That we can, like, people that aren't into 12 steps, I think that they can still appreciate the principles behind it.
Exactly. You know? Exactly. It's all the goodness, but for me fits better the way that the Shit Show runs.
Okay. What song do you want played when you walk into a room?
So George Harrison's Give Me Love, Give Me Hope. I do believe I was brought on this earth to try to bring as much love to the world as possible. And that song really embodies that for me.
Carb.
Chocolate. Chocolate. Anything chocolate. Chocolate all day long.
What's your favorite kind of chocolate? Bar.
Probably dark chocolate with raspberry or with sea salt.
Okay.
But yeah.
Cheese.
Cheese-based life form. So pretty much any version. I just found out though, you know, I have some blood sugar issues and I just found out that dairy is not good for, it like blocks insulin something or other. So I've been told I have to cut back my cheese consumption, which is like, what's the reason to live? But I think my favorite thing right now is blueberry goat cheese on apple slices. Like cheesecake in your mouth. It's so good. Yeah.
Do you get it at Trader Joe's?
Yeah, exactly.
It's so fucking good. Okay, and condiment.
Like the condiments, not a hot sauce gal, but just, you know, kind of all the regular stuff. ketchup, mustard, horseradish, big horseradish.
You can only have one for the rest of your life. What are you picking?
Ooh, mustard.
Mustard. What kind?
Dijon. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
All right. So how did you find out that you were an adult child?
Well, I think I've kind of always known it. I mean, I feel like I, you know, as far as I remember kind of coming online in terms of, you know, memories and conscious thought, I sort of remember looking around going, what in the actual fuck is going on here? Like, I can remember thinking that at like 4 or 5 years old. And I think I've always been kind of connected to this timeless, you know, kind of unshit-showed part of myself, you know, even at a young age. And that part of me said, all right, this isn't normal. But I also at that same time was aware that I was 100% going to have to get myself through survive. This system.
Yeah.
So I kind of shoved that unshit-showed part of myself away for a long time.
Do you remember when you first heard the term?
Probably as a teenager. So
really? Early.
Yeah. So my mom went to Al-Anon, even though my dad wasn't an alcoholic, which is a whole other story. But my mom went to Al-Anon a few times and actually brought me and a couple of other kids. We had 7 kids in the family, so she didn't always have, you know, child care. So I think from Al-Anon, I became aware of ACA shortly after that.
Mm-hmm. And then when was the moment where you were like, I really have to work on this?
I mean, a little bit in high school, definitely in college. I felt like in college, I literally had a conversation with myself that was like, you are either going to get on the path to surviving and thriving and all of that, or you're going to die. And I literally remember sitting on the back steps of the college dorm smoking a cigarette thinking, you know, which path am I going to choose now? So I've been working on it a long time. I, you know, obviously took some detours. I ended up in a, you know, pretty crappy marriage for about 20 years. And that
for about 20 years.
Yeah. First 10 years were great.
Just for a couple years.
Yeah.
First a couple decades.
Yeah.
How were things manifesting for you in college?
So, you know, severe anxiety and eating disorder, which I'd struggled with since literally like 5 or 6 years old, binge eating disorder, alcohol abuse for sure. You know, I just felt like every day I was just gonna explode, all of this, you know, anxiety and then coping mechanisms on top of that. And, you know, also feeling very outsider, you know. I think college was better than high school, but you know, I grew up a fat kid. It's really tough to be a fat ginger in the US. I'll just tell you that.
I would imagine.
And so that all that image struggle, you know, stayed with me through college and is with me now. Like even just talking about it, it's hard to talk about.
So where in the 7 do you fall?
At number 5. Okay. Of 7. Well, I'm sort of like second generation oldest because the first 4 were a big block. And then there was a gap, and then me and my little brother and little sister. And so I, you know, definitely learned from what I saw my older brothers and sisters do, both positive and negative. And so I have a lot of kind of like middle child crap. And then I also have a lot of like oldest crap because I felt like I had to carry the load for my little brother and my little sister. It's so hard to describe. So my dad was like mentally ill in ways that I've never been diagnosed. He wasn't a drinker, but he was just completely disconnected and super rageful and mostly verbally abusive, sometimes physically abusive, but scary as fuck, and would do things that were evil. Like, you know, he'd get mad. His big thing was he'd, you know, go into a rage. He'd, you know, tear up the house. And then he'd leave in his truck and he'd go tearing off. And even though, you know, I kind of hated him, it also scared me. You know, I was like, oh my God, I'm dependent on him. Is he going to come back? You know, all that kind of stuff. But he would purposefully ran over our cat in one of rages.
Oh my God.
And then like things like, you know, Christmas morning and we're opening presents. And for whatever reason, he was super dysregulated. And so he goes into the kitchen, you know, and proceeds to break every dish in the house. So we lived in the basement. So 7 kids, whenever he came home, we had a farm alarm. So if he drove over the cattle guard, I grew up on a farm. So we had 30 seconds from when the time we heard the farm alarm to grab food, water, anything else we wanted, and get down to the basement and be as quiet as we possibly could, because you did not want to get targeted to have to go upstairs.
Do you know if like things were better or worse for your older siblings?
I think things got worse over time, for sure. My oldest brother at one point claims he remembers dad being drunk.
Okay.
And having to hide in a closet. My mom has always denied that. All of his siblings are drunks. So, but so at some point he stopped drinking for unknown reasons.
Yeah. And just became a dry drunk, obviously.
Yeah.
Huh. Yeah. That's interesting, because what is the backstory? Like, why did your mom say she went to Al-Anon, and like, how did she know about it? How old were you?
Yeah, I'm trying to think of how old I was when she took me to Al-Anon. I mean, I somewhere in the either preteen or, you know, like tween-ish teenager land. But I think, yeah, I don't know how she knew to try to seek help that way. She was just really in heavy survival mode. I mean, that, you know, I have a lot of empathy for my mom. I mean, she could not show up the ways that I needed her to be, but she literally was like battered wife syndrome. I mean, she just...
Yeah, what was their dynamic like?
So they were high school sweethearts. Her dad, who ended up passing away when she was 13, told her, you know, small town, Geddes, South Dakota. I mean, you know, 50 people or whatever, you know, 100 people in the whole town.
Jeez. And
her town, or her dad told her never to marry into this family, right? And, but so anyway, they dated a little bit in high school. Then he faked his age, went off into the army. Her family moved out to Washington State. He followed her out there. And she says, you know, or she said later in life that she didn't actually love him, but she didn't know what else to do. And anyway, so they had a good dating life. But as soon as they got married, that's when the abuse started.
Was this right after high school?
Yeah, exactly. And I think she was like 20 when they got married, and he just flipped and, you know, super verbally abusive, sexually assaultive, just horrible. So, but she just didn't see options for herself. And part of that was, you know, the time, you know, we're talking, you know,
absolutely,
the 60s and that sort of thing, and having seven kids, and how are you going to make ends meet? So she was just clinging on.
She just stayed at home, I'm assuming, right?
She did. She started working later. She put herself through transcriptionist school and got a job, and actually at one point left him secretly. And that was a whole...
Were you already out of the house, or?
I was in college. I helped her, you know, escape. Like, every time any of us kids went up to the house, we always took a couple boxes secretly. So we like moved her out box by box, and yeah. Mm-hmm.
But then she went back.
Yeah, exactly.
What did your dad do for work? Was he a farmer?
Part-time farmer, and then he co-owned a plumbing business with my great uncle.
Okay.
And he wanted to be a full-time farmer. He wanted to move us out to, you know, bumfuck nowhere in the middle of Washington State. And my mom always fought it, because she grew up in that tiny town life. And she also, I think, knew that our safety would be even compromised. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm. So
are they alive?
No, both have passed away. Yeah.
And did they stay married till the end?
They stayed married till the end.
Did things ever change?
Dad was better when mom, you know, came back. So, you know, he was...
How long did she leave for?
Probably 3 or 4 months.
Okay.
And then she kind of blamed her leaving on us kids, and kind of said that we forced her to. And that sucked. And that's when at that point, I was like, all right, I got to make a choice here. I got to, like, I'm either going to stay in this family system and just continue in the drama, or I'm out. And so I actually left the family for about 10 years. And that was really, really good for me. It was hard, but it was really good for me.
What do you know about her childhood?
So she had a relatively good childhood, at least as far as how she described it. She was an oops baby. So like all of her older siblings were like, you know, 8, 10, 12 years old. She had a very, very strong relationship with her dad, who passed away when she was 13. And so I think that was a real pivotal, you know, kind of unhealed moment for her. And I don't think she had really any exposure to abuse or anything like that. And so the stuff that happened with my dad was just so shocking to her. And, you know, I think she just was a really kind of innocent and naive person who, and very sensitive, very heart-centered, sensitive person.
Probably
who,
like Stockholm syndrome, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Huh, and so then what do you know about his upbringing? I mean, alcoholism all over the family, obviously.
Yeah. And he's like, I think number 11 of 13 or something crazy. And I mean, his
people.
His dad was just absolutely brutal, you know, with physical abuse. And there's a lot of, you know, heavy religious crap going on too. And rumors of, you know, a lot of sexual abuse going on of the kids by like farmhands and stuff like that. So, you know, he was just completely brutalized. I mean, I just think that he was in a state of shock trauma constantly. And yeah, he just had no capacity. And he thought that, he actually said this at one point, which is the only time, you know, I mean, I count on one hand the number of conversations I've actually had with him, even though he lived in the same house. But at this time when my mom was blaming us for leaving him, we were at some group therapy session, which was so bizarre, on my siblings and my parents. And he actually said that the way that he showed us love was by not beating us as much as he got beat. So, yeah.
So how did, just really quickly, and then I just want to focus pulling on you, how have the rest of your siblings fared?
Yeah. We're all workaholics for sure. And I would say most of us are kind of, you know, walking trauma, you know, people. We're very, yeah.
Any alcoholics?
Yes. I think, I don't know about alcoholic, but I think I have a sibling that has a pretty severe drug problem. I think I've struggled on and off with an unhealthy relationship with alcohol, and another brother that is definitely an alcoholic. And most of us have not been able to keep our marriages together.
Has anybody else dove into ACA or adult child stuff, therapy, trauma?
Yes. So the two sisters I'm closest with have done a lot of work. They've done it in their own way, you know, so not ACA necessarily, but therapy, they've done more spiritual kind of based things. I got turned off on religion really early. And so, you know, it's kind of, I think part of my healing is to actually embrace spirituality a little bit more. But yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Let's hear about this marriage.
Okay. Well, first 10 years were pretty good. I mean, I could see now looking back, obviously signs of dysfunction. I mean, my ex was the youngest of six kids, really charismatic guy. And we sort of bonded, you know, I think we trauma bonded in some ways. We both grew up in the same town. We didn't know each other then, but we both grew up in the same town, these big families, lots of, you know, dysfunction in common, that sort of thing. And, you know, we had kids and we were together for like 9 years before we had kids, married for seven, just kind of, and I'm glad we had that time together. But once we had kids, something kind of flipped in him. It was also at the same time we moved, you know, from Washington State, which is where all our family and friends were from. We moved to Arizona. So we were pretty, you know, kind of isolated. And that's when his, you know, kind of day drinking started and that sort of thing. So, you know, he's a great guy, but, you know, alcohol just absolutely destroyed him. And, you know, became, you know, much more verbally abusive. It was never physically abusive, although he was a super big guy, you know, super tall dude, but he did a lot of very physically intimidating things. You know, like he'd get mad and he'd slam a knife into the cutting board to the point where it broke the knife. And, you know, towards the end, he was like cleaning guns frequently. And it's just like, what do you, you know, after I told him I wanted a divorce, we had to live together for 3 weeks after that and that sort of thing. So I spent, you know, I did the para alcoholic thing or whatever, super codependent. I just was trying so hard to keep together. I had two young kids. I was the only one bringing in any money and, you know, just couldn't see a way out. Yeah. And I didn't think I deserved it, honestly. And so, yeah, anyway, so actually 8 years ago today is when I told him we were done.
Wow. Congratulations.
Yeah.
And talk about like, what was coming to that decision? Like, was there like a final straw or Like a portal aha moment or what happened? Okay, shit show dudes, you can tune out. This is for my fellow shit show ladies. Are you going through perimenopause or menopause? I'm not quite there yet, but I know that I have plenty to look forward to. Feeling like a wet sock driving down the highway. Night sweats. Poor sleep. Feeling tired all the time. Bloating. Gas. Man, can't wait for this shit. Now, if that is applicable to you, then you have to try Hormone Harmony. So Hormone Harmony is not just a supplement for women going through perimenopause, menopause, or postmenopause. It's become a phenomenon. Women cannot stop talking about it. A bottle of Hormone Harmony is sold every 24 fucking seconds, okay? Now, Happy Mammoth, the company that created Hormone Harmony, is dedicated to making women's lives easier using only science-backed ingredients that have been proven to work. Now, for my younger shit show women like myself, if you struggle from that vicious week before your period, you want to crawl out of your skin, experience cravings, want to eat everything in the damn house, you feel a little bit down or off, well, Happy Mammoth also has a product for you to make it easier to manage your PMS with their Estro Control. So for a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code adultchild at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code adultchild for 15% off today.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable. Ah.
Yeah, there was a couple of final stress. So the year before, we were living in California, we came up to Lake Condoree in Idaho, which is just absolutely stunning. And we rented a cabin and we had kind of various family members coming through at different times to stay. And he was just so out of control, both on the drinking and emotional abuse. So like when people were around, there was one side of him. And then as soon as they would leave, you know, he would just go into these rages, and he got into an argument with my oldest daughter, who at the time was like, you know, 10, and they ended up in a screaming match to the point where he said that he thought that she should kill herself and that he would dance on her grave. And, you know, so that whole weekend just, or that whole week just, you know, kind of went on. And I mean, it was just like awful, awful. My sister came out for a while and she said, as soon as he came into the house, I completely transformed into this like super shut down, you know, version of myself and all that. So that was the point at which where I was like, okay, I got to get myself into therapy because I just can't live like this anymore. And then it took me 11 months in therapy. You know, I kept trying to figure out like, how can I tell him that I'm not happy? You know, how can I figure out how to communicate this to him and, you know, blah, blah, blah. Then all of a sudden I realized like,
there's no way. There's no right way.
There's no way. Any way I do this is going to be a rage thing. And, you know, he might actually kill me. And so then I kind of flipped the switch to, okay, how do I get out of this? And how do I have cover? You know, he was taking care of, quote unquote, taking care of the kids. And
how old were they at that point?
They were young. They were like maybe 10 and 11. And, or maybe even younger, you know, about at that age. But all, you know, he wasn't taking care of them. Like I started to see that, you know, he was, yeah, it's a long story, but yeah, he wasn't taking care of them. I still had to make money. I'm living in California. You got to make money like crazy there. And in order to survive and keep the kids in school and, you know, yada, yada. So I had to kind of like line up a niece to come live with us so that I had, you know, that so I could keep the income going and get him out. Yeah, it was rough.
And how was it for your kids?
My oldest daughter was unfortunately, you know, kind of parentified quite a bit, or I guess I shouldn't say parentified, but like had to be older than her years. So leading up to it, she was, cause she bore most of the, among the two kids, she bore more of his rage because she stands up for herself and he couldn't stand that. So she would say to me, you know, kind of leading up to it, she's like, okay, look, mom, you know, it's not going to get any easier. You're just going to have to, you know, rip the Band-Aid off, that sort of thing. My younger one wanted to save him from his own abandonment stories. And so the younger is like, how could you do this to dad? And kind of bought into the whole storyline, but now has an accurate picture.
Yeah, I mean, I'm assuming that, and you hear this, right? Like with having kids probably brought up all of his shit, and that's why he started
Yeah.
drinking more.
Yeah, exactly. He has so much unhealed stuff going on. But yeah, but he's still completely, drunk all day. And the kids don't really, Annika has no relationship. My oldest has no relationship with him. She sets some pretty firm boundaries that he can't, live up to. So, and then my younger one tries to stay connected, but is starting to realize that it's not good for them to do that. So, yeah.
Well, I mean, think about it. Like you, I know that you have regrets, and but like your mom was never able to leave.
Yeah, and I kind of feel like in some ways I had to complete her story.
Yeah, I reread the story.
Yeah. So, but I
I'm
haven't
curious,
really.
like if it's because you're, talking about like having a lot of compassion, like for her, has there also been room for like the anger to come up towards her too?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, she just, couldn't be there for us in the ways that we needed. I mean, she just, there was no affection, there was no. Yeah, nothing that any kid actually needs. It was all her basically trying to suppress us as much as possible. And I know her motivation was to keep us safe, but it still had a really, terrible impact on self-esteem, on any sense of connection, or like, I think that's the thing that I've been struggling the most with. And, I've been simplifying my life in many ways. And I'm sort of kind of realizing like just this deep sense of aloneness that I've had since I was, as long as I can remember being sentient and no comfort from it, just absolutely no comfort from it ever in my family system. Yeah.
Yeah,
I
it's
can
like
remember one.
learning how to have like I think about this with my mom or my parents. It's like two things can be true in one respect. We can like be pissed off and we have every right to be angry, and then also holding space for like a lot of people, they just it's like not even like a possibility. Like it would take some sort of crazy miracle like for certain people to like actually be able to change. It's like I think we think in our head, because we've been able to like do this and recover and heal, but we like fail to realize like how we are in such a small percentage of like the people that actually can do it. And I think about my mom. I mean, it's like it's not that easy. Like a lot of these people are, it's impossible.
Yeah, they can't even see it. Yeah,
So
exactly.
it's like two
Yeah.
things can be true. So talk
Yeah.
about like what, over the past couple of years, like what have been some pivotal signs of your growth and healing, and what about like repairing the relationship with your kids? And
Yeah, I started getting some body-based trauma therapy in 2020. So
what did
it's
that look
this,
like?
yeah, so the it's actually a body work modality called polarity therapy, which you can kind of think of as like, if Reiki and like acupressure had a baby. And but because it was the pandemic, so I got connected with this practitioner, a guy named Brian, an amazing guy.
Said polarity.
Polarity therapy, yeah. But it was the beginning of the pandemic. We couldn't see each other in person. And so there was a communication component to it as well that involves somatic dialogue and kind of energetic dialogue. And so we did that for quite some time. And when I first started working with him, I had absolutely no sense of myself. Like I lived my life completely in reflection of other people and trying to make other people happy. I literally had no sense of myself and, super codependent. Super low self-esteem, incredibly disconnected from my body. I mean, I remember one of our first sessions, he was like, okay, well, why don't you put your hand on your stomach and, just kind of see what it's like to provide support to that like pit in your stomach. And I was like, no, I don't do that. I don't put my hand on my
Thank you,
stomach.
sir.
No, I'm not doing this. And so over the course of our work together, it was just a really gentle and long process. I just actually had my last session with him a couple of weeks ago, 4 years, where I actually connected to a sense of myself for the very, very first time. I was at a lake cabin looking out on the water, and I'd gotten to this point multiple times, and then I would just dysregulate and collapse. I didn't like quite get there. And I was able to like, really connect with myself in a way that I hadn't before. And then, really do a lot of really heavy work to go from just wanting life to suck a little less. I actually told him that. I was like, that's my goal. I just want life to suck a little less. And I was like,
the bar high, lady.
Yeah. Like, is there an upgrade there that we can maybe? So through the course of that, I mean, I completely transformed my relationship to my kids, which, you know, my relationship to my kids had been wanting them to be okay so I could be okay. And they were teenagers, and no fucking teenagers ever okay. And, you know, they obviously would, you know, have their mental health struggles and traumas and all of that. And my youngest is transgender, and that has a whole other set of, you know, things that go along with that. And so I was able to just let my kids be the people that they are and be a source of support for them and a safe, you know, kind of place for them to land, versus trying to control them to be a certain way so that I could not be anxious about their future and about myself as a mom and all that kind of stuff. So like my daughter, when I told her, I was like, yeah, I think I'm gonna have my last session with Brian. And she's like, are you sure? You know, you should probably stay with Brian. Brian's good for you. So they saw a big transformation in my ability to cope. And I still have a lot of work to do though. So yeah, so that's been really good. And then, you know, kind of through that, I was able to like leave my soul sucking corporate job and start three businesses that are doing reasonably well. I mean, I'm making it happen, and they're in college, and yeah, so it's good.
That's amazing. Three businesses is a lot all at once.
Yeah. I mean, one's the moneymaker and it leverages my corporate experience. So, you know, that's kind of my cash cow. And then the other two, one's a coaching business, you know, for people in tech, because that's my background and I know how to make your way in that system. And then the third is I'm actually a polarity therapist myself now.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah. I don't do the body work side of it as much, but the communication side of it and the kind of somatic dialoguing and energetic dialoguing, that is, I feel like, a superpower for me. And so that is something that I am continuing to grow and basically help people kind of release pain, anxiety, stuff that's trapped. It's very similar to, I think, India.
Uh-huh.
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting. What kind of work have you been doing with people individually?
Yeah. So polarity. So there's kind of two aspects to polarity. There's the body work side of things, basically, and then there's more of the somatic dialogue side, which can be done remotely. So I've done both sides. I mean, the net of it is that through stress, trauma, and injury, we all hold ourselves in protective patterns, and that they can be physical patterns, they can be emotional patterns, they can be energetic patterns, you know, et cetera. And so when on the bodywork side, you can really work with where those patterns are showing up and through different types of touch and, you know, kind of energetic exchanges, you can help release those patterns in a way that talk therapy kind of doesn't get to.
Mm-hmm.
It's like you can have an intellectual understanding of something, but polarity work really gives your body an understanding of the healing. So I have done quite a bit of body work with people. I have gravitated more toward the communication side of things, which is basically, it's very aligned with parts work, less about like having identifiers for the different names of the parts and more about really having a somatic experience of that part without a lot of intellectualizing and being able to dialogue with that part through your body and what's coming up with sensations in your body as you start to explore, you know, where that part might live, what sensations are common to it, what it needs to tell you in order to calm down and integrate. So it's really lovely. I mean, I've helped people with anything from, you know, chronic pain to realize, you know, helping them realize that they were, you know, in the wrong relationship and that their parts were trying to tell them things that their mind was resisting and that sort of thing. So yeah, I kind of call myself like a pain and anxiety liberator.
Love that. Side. Is there a book that talks about this stuff, this modality?
I would say probably the best resource would be to go to the Polarity Institute website. And that is my teacher. He's got a lot of really great resources about what polarity therapy is. And I think he's probably on the forefront of advancing the practice further. But yeah, so it's been really, 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 really satisfying to do that work because it's been so profound for me to be a recipient of it and then to be able to help others.
Maybe he would be
It's been
somebody
really powerful.
interesting to have on the podcast.
Brian? Oh yeah, definitely. I can definitely make that
Yeah, I'd love
connection.
to connect with them. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I see it here. It's awesome. Where is he based? In the Bay Area?
Yeah, he's San Francisco.
Oh, wonderful. Yeah, I'd
But
love to connect with them. Well, that's amazing. How has that been to kind of step into something that feels a little bit more fulfilling and more in your aligned with your calling?
yeah, I think it's been really great. I mean, every time that I do a session with someone, it just affirms that this is what I'm meant to do. And I still have a lot of, a lot of doubt come up. A lot of doubt comes up because the quote unquote safe path is for me to kind of continue getting, courting corporate money. But this for me is, every part of my being is a yes when I'm doing this kind of work. And I'm just so grateful. I mean, it impacts every kind of relationship as well, because a lot of being a polarity practitioner is your own system creating a field that has safety. Like I benefit, I come out of those polarity sessions so regulated and integrated. Not that I'm using my clients, but it is a byproduct of the practice for me. So it's just really great.
When did you do the training?
So I've been doing the training probably for about 3 years now,
Wow.
and I completed the kind of level one. Brian's coming out with a new kind of dialogue only modality called biofield trauma training, and I've been through a lot of his courses on that already, and just want to continue whatever he offers. I'm taking in that regard just because it's so such a powerful way of getting to know oneself that bypasses the brain, which I think for a lot of adult children is important, because I know I can stay, the more I stay in my head, the more my patterns are allowed to
Shittier
flourish.
my life gets, the shittier I feel.
Yeah, and just my patterns just keep ping-ponging around, and then it keeps me stuck, right? And so being able to bypass that kind of intellectual, logical, should, top-down way of managing,
Shoulda, coulda, woulda. Yes.
authoritarian, not bottom-up, not authentic, not organic. Yeah, the more I can bypass that, the more I'm able to kind of expand and grow.
Well, it's exciting. I'm excited to
Yeah.
learn more about that. Okay, so give me three things that you like about yourself.
Few things I like about myself. I am really funny. I have to be really close to you though, before that side of me comes
Comes
out.
out.
I have an alter ego named Sparkles
Okay.
that, really
Okay, that's
likes
your
to
nickname now.
shine.
Okay, Sparkles,
Yeah.
yes.
Yeah. It's actually my karaoke stage name. But she's kind of like my
What's your song
fun.
of choice?
Well, I'm going through quite a bit of a transformation on that. I would say right now, "Hey There, Delilah" by the White Tees. I'm gonna play White
Okay.
Tees. Yeah. So that I have more grit and determination than, I just know how to like pull myself up by the bootstraps
Get it
and
done,
keep
get her
going.
done.
Yeah, and I have a really big heart. I love deeply and as openly as I possibly can. Try to love pure as much as I can.
Beautiful. Okay, hope or dream for the future.
Hope or dream. So I have a lot of creativity that I think has been kind of pushed to the side. Like, if you think a lion's going to eat you, you're not going to break out the paintbrush and paint the scenery, right? So I've been in survival mode for so long. And so I do think that I am going to get to a point of safety within myself an integration within myself that I can really let that creativity flow. And I'm kind of excited about, so I used to think creativity, and then I'd be like, oh, I'm not creative, or all these like
Me
negative
too.
limiting beliefs, or I can't afford to be creative, right? But now I'm like, oh, there's little sparks everywhere. And I've been following those sparks a little bit more, which feels good. But yeah, I think that I might be one of those people that kind of finds their creative outlet later in life. And so I'm can't wait to see what comes of that.
Yeah, I feel like my kind of wounds that are still there is blocking me, blocking a lot of my creativity still. And the one thing that's hard for me is like, I feel like I'm just like funny on the fly. And it's hard for me to like come up with like, when I'm trying to think of like funny content for like social media, like if I have to like sit and think about it, I can't, like my best work just comes on the fly, you know?
Yeah, spontaneous. That's good.
Yes. But it would be nice to like be able to hone it in some. Well,
I've had a couple of times where that kind of funny inspiration has come to me for like corporate presentations and stuff like that ahead of time. And man, it's fucking awesome when it comes to you,
Come
but
through.
I can't manufacture it, you know?
I know. I agree. It's all about keeping that channel clear. So.
Exactly.
Well, I'm so
Yeah.
grateful that I got to know you better, and yeah, I'm excited to see your growth too. I feel like we're kind of, on similar paths, so
Yeah, for sure.
doing something fulfilling.
Yeah. Well, I can't thank you enough, Andrea, for everything that you're doing and this community and the podcast, and just huge fan, and you're doing really important life-changing work for all of us, and I hope you can take it in.
Me too.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.